This is the Missing People Podcast. Hello, I'm Steve Braunham. Welcome to the third and final section of Kelly's interview with Robert Lancaster, creator and webmaster of the website StopSylviaBrown.com. Their conversation continues.
We are back with part three of talking with Robert Lancaster. He is the author of StopSylviaBrown.com. Welcome back to the show, Robert.
Thank you.
And we're so glad to have you. I know that you're busy, and I suspect that you are getting busier all the time because I would imagine that your emails are increasing daily with the site and the information that you're providing about Sylvia Brown, and you're probably hearing a lot of interesting stories about her by this point.
Definitely. The emails, for the most part, get more and more every week. During the Sean Hornbeck story, they were at their height and they've gone down since then, but they continue to go back up little by little. And yes, I do hear a lot of interesting things, and I have a whole stack of stories that I need to investigate before I can write them up and put them up on the site. But I promise you that there will be some interesting stories coming up in the coming weeks.
Now, I know that there was one that I thought was really interesting, and that was an interview that you did with one of her ex-husbands. And I suppose that if there's anyone listening who's really a very diehard fan of Sylvia's, they're probably going to immediately dismiss anything he says simply because of the fact that he's an ex-husband. But you took a different slant on that interview with him, and there was something I felt he revealed that just really tells the tale about Sylvia.
Well, I believe you're talking about when I asked him if he believed in her abilities, and he said no. She had never shown any of these abilities while they were married. And in her biography, it talks about all the things that she showed during the marriage, and he said none of those things happened. But the one thing that she mentioned in the book that he said sort of happened was when she described he was a fireman at the time, and they would occasionally have his coworkers and their spouses over to the house for a party. And Sylvia Brown, and this is back, oh gosh, late 60s, early 70s, I don't have the time frame exactly, but they would have these people over, and Sylvia Brown was at the time into tarot cards, which were very, very popular at the time. And she would give tarot card readings to the coworkers and their spouses. And Gary Dufresne is the ex-husband's name, and he said that some of the people were just blown away by it, even though it was just all stuff that she seemed to be just making up off the top of her head and just cold reading as a lot of tarot card readers are, and in fact, all of them, as far as I know. But after one of these parties, Gary said that the two of them were washing dishes, and he said he asked her, why do you do that? Why do you know it's all nonsense, and yet you do it in front of these people, and some of them believe it. Why would you do that? And according to Gary Dufresne, she said, screw them. Anybody who believes this stuff ought to be taken. Now that's a direct quote from the interview. And he believes that really shows her attitude towards all of this psychic stuff and to all of the people who believe in her to this day. He feels that she's in it totally for the money, and she makes a lot of money, a lot of money. She has mentioned in interviews that she gives anywhere from 15 to 20 psychic readings a day, 6 days a week. Now, her cheapest readings she gives are these $750 phone readings. She has in-person readings, which I've been told are $2,000. I have not verified that. And she also has spiritual salons where a group of people get to pay $1,000 each to spend the day with Brown and some of her ministers. And Brown gives a little reading to each of them at the end of the day. So the cheapest reading she gives, $750. So if she does 20 a day, she is making $15,000 a day.
She does
6 days a week, $90,000 a week. Even if she takes several weeks off vacation, that's millions of dollars just from her readings, based on the statistics she gives. Beyond that, you have her royalties on her 40 different books that are out there, the income from the study groups for her church, Novus Spiritus. You have to pay to be a study group for her church. You have to pay for the study guides that only the church will provide you. It's a lot of money rolling in. She has these cruises that people pay a lot of money to go on. She has self-hypnosis, or I guess just hypnosis classes that are a couple of grand each, if I recall. We're talking lots and lots of money coming in. So that's I think that pretty much speaks for itself. And a lot of people who email me say that they believed in her just by seeing her on Montel or from reading her books. But when they went to her site and saw that I was right, she is charging, and it says right on her site, $750 for a 20 to 30 minute phone reading. And from the people that I've talked to who have had these phone readings, they actually are usually more like 10 or 15 minutes. But she's raking in a lot of money, and that offends a lot of people. And it should. I'm frankly offended by what she does, even if she did it for free. But the fact that she is making so much money off of people in vulnerable points in their lives, people with missing family members, people who are suffering from some disease that the doctors can't help them with, and they turn to a psychic for help, people who have a loved one who passed away unexpectedly or violently, and they're looking for answers, and they turn to a psychic for them. These are all people that are vulnerable, they're in pain, they're desperate, they reach out to someone who charges them $750 to talk to them for 20 minutes and to pretend that they're psychic for 20 minutes. I can't even tell you how horrible the whole thing is to me.
Now, personally, I feel like if a person is dishonest in one way, the odds are definitely going to increase that they're dishonest in many ways. And I know that you've got an article on your site about a dishonesty in her book that I feel is something just to make her look better, but also it seems rather silly that she would be dishonest with something that could be checked out. And that was her saying that she has a master's degree in English. And that's something that you had written one of your articles about.
Well, she makes that claim in many books. It'll have a little about the author section on the inside cover. And a lot of her books, it mentions that she has a master's degree in English literature. Now, if you watch the woman on the Montel show and listen to the way she speaks, to me, she does not strike me as being someone who has a master's degree in English literature. And that's obviously not proof of anything, but she doesn't strike me that way. And what enhances my doubt on that is nowhere does she appear to say where she claims to have earned this degree. Normally, if someone has a degree, they're rather proud of where they earned it, and they'll mention that, and she never does. And again, no proof of anything, but suspicious to me. So when I interviewed Gary Dufresne, her ex-husband, that was one of the questions I asked him, what he thought of her claim to have a master's degree. He said, no, she doesn't have a master's degree. She can't even have a bachelor's degree. And he claimed that when he met her, she had only had, at best, 1 year of higher education. Well, when that article went on my site, I've been told by many people that Sylvia Brown hit the ceiling. She was not happy that her ex-husband was talking out of school, so to speak. And that claim that she had only been only had 1 year of higher education when they met, she was very upset about. And she sent me a transcript of her years at a college in Kansas City. And I looked into it, and indeed, she had had three years of college when she met Dufresne. So he was wrong, and I told him about that, and he accepted that he was wrong. He just was not aware, or possibly forgot. But still, in contacting the college and verifying that she did have those 3 years, they said she earned no degree. She didn't even earn a bachelor's degree in those 3 years. So she has yet to supply the proof that she had such a degree, and it would be such a simple thing for her to do. You either tell the skeptics, here's the university and here's the year in which I earned this degree, or you take it down off your wall if you got your degree up on your wall, and you make a Xerox of it and you put it up on your own website, or send a copy to me, I'll put it on my website. To me, even if she does have the degree, that doesn't make her more psychic in my eyes. It would just mean that I was wrong about this particular claim of hers. But yet, as simple as it would be for her to prove that she's right, if she is right, she has yet to do so.
That does definitely seem odd. Now, you have a copy of the transcript that was sent to you, but you've got a lot of things blanked out, or it's in some way that you can't really see it. Is that because there's personal information on there?
Well, even though she sent me the transcript, she did it through another person, and she did not give me specific permission to put the document up on the site. And I don't think that a college transcript is a public document, and so I don't think I have the right to put it up on the board without her explicit permission. And I contacted some of her office staff and this person through whom she had relayed the transcript to me, and said, if you want me to put this up on the site, you're going to have to send me a signed document signed by Sylvia Brown on her letterhead saying, yes, it's okay to put this up on the site, because we haven't discussed this yet. Brown has already proven that she is not beyond throwing attorneys at me for totally frivolous reasons. Back in January, one of her attorneys sent me a letter, an email and a letter, demanding that I take down the site, claiming that not that what I said about her was not true, but claiming that I was violating her trademark by using her name, Sylvia Brown, as part of www.stopsylviabrown.com. And they were trying to bully me into taking the site down. And luckily, I know a bit about my rights and knew how laughable that was, and contacted some attorneys to make sure that I was right in that, and I was. You are totally free to put together a website or critiquing a public figure or a product or a company and using that person's name or the product name or the company name in your site. There are plenty of sites out there, you know, ChevySucks.com or, you know, IHateGeorgeBush.com, that type of thing. There's tons of them out there, and they're protected under free speech. And there's no way that someone can shut them down by claiming to have a trademark on their name. It was laughable. And so I put her attorney's letter to me up on the site. An attorney volunteered to draft a letter back to her for me. That went up on the site, and the letter basically told her that she was not talking out the right orifice, and that I was not going to take the site down. And I haven't heard from the attorney since. So knowing that, I was not about to put her transcript, a private, non-public document, that is, on the site without her specific permission. And it was even possible that she was giving me that document in hopes that I would put it on the site without permission, and so she would have something that she could legitimately file a grievance about. So not wanting to take any risks, I simply told her, if you want it up on the site, you're going to have to give me permission. And I put an image of it up on the site, but it's very blurred out, so no detail can be read.
It would certainly appear that you've been successful in the site in a fairly short period of time, because there's definitely reaction coming from her side, and I'm sure she's quite displeased with what you're doing. I, on the other hand, am very pleased with what you're doing because of my work with families of the missing and just trying to help them understand what goes on behind the scenes, even with the most famous psychic of them all, at least here in the United States, Sylvia Brown, that it's not all what it seems. I appreciate your work, your very strong, powerful work to this effect, and hoping that our families of the missing are also looking at that site. Now, just to kind of backtrack and to provide some information for listeners who may have a missing loved one in their life or have some strong interest in that, can you give some examples of some of the techniques that psychic use to basically, in a sense, pull the person in and get them believing in what they're doing, such as you mentioned earlier, a cold reading, and some of the listeners may not know what a cold reading is or some examples of that. You also mentioned how some of the people who emailed you started watching her on Montel in a different light and kind of starting to pick out these techniques that she's doing. Can you expand on that?
Well, I'm hoping to put an article on the site sometime with it that explains cold reading in more depth than what I've been able to so far. I'll just mention it offhand. Cold reading is a technique that's used by lots of professions, not just psychics and tarot card readers and crystal ball readers, but it's used by psychiatrists and car salesmen and lots of people. It's a way of making the person you're talking to think you know more about them than you really do. And in the case of, say, a psychic, you make them think that you know these things through psychic means. And there are many, many tools in a cold reader's toolkit. One of them is something that's called a forer statement. A forer statement is a type of statement that is true of a large percentage of the population, but people, when you say it to them, tend to think that it's specifically about them. It's true about them, and wow, how did they know this? When it's actually, you know, 90% of the people that you said this to would say, yeah, that's true about me. But in the context of a psychic reading, someone says something that like that to you, you think, wow, well, they are psychic. How do they know that? When they don't. Some examples, some very general examples of four statements are things like, you sometimes are very outgoing, but other times you're very shy, or you like a lot of people, but there are some people that you really don't trust. I mean, you say things, this is true of anybody on the planet, and yet if you say it in the right way and in the right context, it will astound a lot of people. The Forer statement got its name from a professor by the name, last name Forer, I can't remember his first name, but in a class he was teaching, he told the students that he had the students fill out a questionnaire and said that he was taking it home to analyze their personalities from their responses. The next day he brought into the class individual personality profiles, you know, with individual names of the different people on them, handed them out to the class, here's yours, and then after they got a chance to read their description of them, he had them vote as to how accurate and specific this was to them, and with five being extremely accurate and one being almost not accurate at all, and the class, I believe it was in the 90 percentile, gave it a 4 or 5, gave their individual profile as being extremely accurate or very accurate. He then let them in on the secret that everybody in the classroom had the exact same profile. And everyone was astounded because they thought that their profile was very unique to them. But it was true of everybody in the classroom, evidently. So that's a 4 statement, and that's one of the things that the cold readers use. Another thing the cold readers do is repeat things back to you, and if you don't notice that you told them in the first place, you think that they came up with a fact, and no, you gave them that fact. An example would be a psychic who says, I think there was someone in your family who had a problem in the chest area. I'm sensing a problem in the chest. And then the person says, oh, my Aunt Mary had breast cancer. And then later on, that person will tell friends, the psychic knew that my Aunt Mary had breast cancer. Well, if he knew it, he didn't say it. You said it. And that's another tool that's in the cold reader's toolkit. And there are many, many more. And if you don't know about all this, it can be difficult to pick out. There are books about cold reading that once you read them, you start seeing things in these psychics that you wouldn't have seen before. And that's the story of cold reading.
I know that in my case, with some of the psychics that approached us, you know, obviously we're very public and there's quite a bit of our story on the internet. So with really just a little bit of research, anyone can find out quite a bit about what has happened with our missing son. And I know that in my case, in one particular psychic who came to us, every single thing that she told me that was correct was something that you could read on the internet. But the things that she told me that were incorrect were not anything that was public. So, you know, I find that in a lot of cases too. So if you're public, they can find out things, and you might have even forgot. I've written so much on the internet, I might forget that I posted a certain story about my son, as an example.
Well, sure, and you don't even need to be public. I mean, there are, nowadays with the web, people can find out a lot about you, even if you've never been on the web before, just by going to certain private databases, LexisNexis and some of the others. You can look up a person's name and find out a lot about where they live, what their house looks like, how much they earn, a lot of different things. And what you're describing here is not cold reading. This is hot reading. Hot reading is where you have information that you got through other means, and you pretend to have gotten it through psychic means. Cold reading is something where you can take someone off the street that you've never met, don't know their name, nothing, and you can cold read them. Hot reading, you need to do research.
Now, mediumship is another type of psychic where pretend to be talking with dead people, the dead people supposedly providing information about the asking person.
Yes.
And that's another one that, I don't know, it's just like, why would, if dead people could communicate with us, you know, here, why would they only have to go through the psychic? Why couldn't they communicate to your next door neighbor? Why couldn't they communicate to you? Why do you have to potentially pay money to have them only communicate with this particular person, such as Sylvia Brown? Because does she not pretend that she has a spirit guide, correct?
Right. Yes, she has a spirit guide named Francine, who supposedly gives her all this information. And, well, even if you can accept that there are certain people who a spirit could only contact you through someone with a specific skill, a psychic medium, even if you buy that, why would a person, a spirit, not be able to communicate clearly? Why is it always with initials or sounds or... That they'll be very specific about certain things that you can't check, but if it's anything that you could check, it's usually pretty vague what they give you.
I always find it odd that they can never see an entire license plate number.
Right.
It's just, why? Why can you not see the whole thing? If you're a spirit and you have these extra earthly powers as a spirit, you would think you could see the whole thing. And in our case, there's a specific question about our missing son that we would ask these psychics when they pretend to be communicating with dead people, mm-hmm. and pretend they're communicating with our son directly. I would ask them a question about him that I know is not public. And every time they would come back within a half a second with their answer, and their answer was always dead wrong.
This is very similar to what Harry Houdini and his wife did when Houdini spent a lot of the later years of his life debunking spiritualists and fraudulent mediums. And when he was near death or getting up in age, he made a pact with his wife that if he died first, he would do everything in his power to contact her, if at all possible. And if he did contact her, here is the secret phrase that he would use. So if you go to see a medium and she says that she's talking to me and she doesn't say this phrase, she's a fraud. And for years after Houdini's death, his wife went to various spiritualists and psychic mediums who claimed to be speaking with Harry Houdini, and none of them ever gave her that secret phrase.
Well, that's certainly not a surprise.
No.
Now, I'm not sure how much research you've done on some of the other psychics who are very popular, but John Edwards seems to be also one that's quite popular, and he's had a TV show. I don't know if he has one now, but in some of my research, I read that there are microphones planted all over in the audience, you know, under the seats, wherever, and that the ushers have microphone, and there's people planted who listen to what the audience members are saying so that he can use that information to pretend he's psychic. Do you know much about that?
I know there are people who claim that. I don't know if that there's any proof that that is how he does what he does. It's a theory. It's definitely a workable theory as to how he could and how others have in the past. There are people such as, there was a minister named Peter Popoff who back in the, I believe it was the 70s or early 80s, would go around and with a basically a psychic act. He would have a tent full of worshipers there, and he would be saying things about, I'm sensing Mary Smith over here in the front row, and you live in Anaheim or whatever, and people would be amazed, and he would be telling them that it was Jesus that was giving him this information. Well, James Randi investigated the man and found out that it wasn't that Jesus or God that was giving Peter Popoff the information. It was his wife speaking to him backstage via a microphone, and he had an earpiece in his ear. She and the rest of his crew would wander around prior to the show as people were coming in and would ask him questions. Oh, where are you from, and what's your name, and why are you here today, what's your ailment? A lot of people were there to hopefully get cures for various illnesses. And they would write these things down on cards, and then she would feed them back to him over this earpiece. And people were utterly amazed at these wondrous things that he knew. And again, there were things that they had told his staff. So does John Edward use this kind of a method? I don't know. The times I've seen his old show, I haven't seen the one that he had recently, but his old show, Crossing Over, I never see him be right enough about something that made me think, well, maybe he got that information through a microphone or something. All that I ever saw him do was some really generic, cold reading kind of stuff. I'm sensing the letter M over here. Someone passed away with the letter M, and someone jumped up and, my cousin Marvin passed away. And it's, you don't need a microphone to come up with that kind of stuff. That's all stuff that's the basic, you know, cold reading 101, that you don't need any prior information. I know there was, I can't remember who it was, I believe it was ABC, but one of the networks did a profile on John Edward when he was at sort of the height of his popularity. And at one point, they followed him around with cameras for a couple of days. And one of the days they were, I think, watching him taking dance lessons. Before he was a famous psychic medium, he taught ballroom dancing. That was his previous engagement. And they filmed him there. And while they were there, he spoke to one of the cameramen he thought the cameras weren't rolling. And the cameraman was talking to him about the fact that the cameraman is a young man, that his father had recently passed away. And one of the other cameramen had a camera rolling, and I guess John Edward might not have known that. Well, later that day, they were filming Edward in front of one of his audiences doing his readings, and suddenly he was getting this information about an older man that had passed. Maybe it's a father. And he was basically feeding back to this cameraman the exact same information that the cameraman had given him hours earlier. And when he was confronted with the evidence of this later on, he said, oh, well no, that's not where I got the information. No, that wasn't at all. That's just a coincidence. Okay, well, prove it. Prove it. The thing is, with these theories such as microphones in the audience and all these other things, whether you have proof of them or not, they're all legitimate theories. And ways in which it could be explained how someone knows something that you think they have no way of knowing. If someone is actually getting this information, you know, through spirits or through telepathy or whatever thing that they claim, fine, prove it. Take a scientific test and prove it. Otherwise, it's the far more wise assumption that they're using one of these other illegitimate methods to obtain the information.
And that was an excellent summary of that, too, Robert. I appreciate that. Now, if someone's listening and they decide that they want to do some more research about the topic of psychics, whether it just be psychics in general or psychics and missing people. Now, as far as my blog series, the URL is fairly long, but if you do a Google search on psychics and missing people, you will find it. It is a Google Blogspot site. And then Robert's site, of course, is stopsylviabrown.com. Robert, what other websites would you recommend for someone who might want to research this?
Well, James Randi, I keep bringing the man's name up. He's a very famous investigator of paranormal claims. His website, which is www.randi, that's R-A-N-D-I.org, is a wealth of information about various so-called paranormal topics, psychics being one of them. And he has a weekly commentary in which he talks about various things that are in the news and claims that have come up. And if you go to his site and search for the word psychic or any topic of that nature that you're interested in, you'll see page after page after page of information about the topic. And so a lot of it is Randy's opinion, but he backs up his opinion with a lot of facts, and sometimes he's a little abrasive. So brace yourself for that, but if you can get past that, some people can't, but if you can get past that, wonderful, wonderful information, and a lot of information on critical thinking and how to approach these kinds of subjects.
And I also can't let our interview end without mentioning the forum that's associated with the James Randi Educational Foundation. There's a forum on the site that you can go to, that you can register and post and converse with other people about critical thinking, skepticism, psychics, and of course a number of related topics. And the people on that forum have just been wonderful to me, very supportive. They've been helpful for me when I was researching the topics of psychics to find me all sorts of information to help me better understand the techniques that they were using. And, you know, then I can look back on my unfortunate experiences and actually see how they were using those techniques, and other families of the missing can as well. So, of course, I thank the James Randi Educational Foundation and all the people on the forum. And also, Robert, that is where I met you.
Yes, it is. I'm very glad we met, and as I think I've told you before, you're one of my heroes. What you do and how you've taken such a hard part of your life and turned it around to help others as well as yourself is heroic to me, and I thank you for doing it.
Well, thank you, Robert. That's very kind, and you know, as you know, and I have and will continue to be a resource for you, especially as you're researching any missing person-related issues as it pertains to the StopSylviaBrown.com site. And again, we thank you for being with us here this evening. I know that you're very busy and appreciate the time and the wonderful explanations of what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Well, it's been my pleasure.
This concludes the third and final section of Kelly's interview with Robert Lancaster. You're listening to the Missing People Podcast, copyright 2007, all rights reserved and held jointly by the Missing People Podcast and Project Jason. Original music created and performed by Ariana Kemaw. For more information on Project Jason, please go to projectjason.org. And don't forget to check out Robert's website at stopsylviabrown.com. For my co-host, Kelly Jolkowski, I'm Steve Braunham with the Missing People Podcast. Thanks for listening.